verses 14 through 19. 2 Timothy 2, 14 through 19. Remind them of these things, charging them before the Lord not to strive about words to no profit, to ruin of the hearers. Be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. But shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more ungodliness, and their message will spread like cancer. Hymenaeus and Philetus are of this sort, who have strayed concerning the truth, saying that the resurrection is already past, and they overthrow the faith of some. Nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal: the Lord knows those who are his, and let everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm going to take my thoughts from what Brother J.J. read from 2 Timothy chapter 2. Kind of a different approach to this. I guess there's things to kind of keep in mind as we do read this. One of the things that strikes me is he says to remind them, so it makes me think that they've heard it before. And then the Lord knows who are his. So that makes me think that they've heard these things before, and some folks were taking heed to what Paul was writing, and some were not, and obviously he tells us about a couple in there. But it's called, I titled it, Diligent Study. Study to show thyself approved is, I believe, the way the King James reads that. But diligent study takes conscious and steadfast effort. And I want you to think of it in the following terms. Now, from the perspective of an actor. Now, I want to have a disclaimer here. I'm not advocating for anyone becoming an actor. I don't know if anybody in here has the desire to do that. I think it could be an honorable profession or vocation. One of the things that I think it used to be really honorable, or at least not anything like it is today, but anybody remember or heard of, I don't remember them, I've heard of them because I listen to them on the radio. I love old classic shows on the radio. Phil Harris, remember Phil Harris, anybody? Phil Harris and Alice Faye, some of the two funniest people. I think they're hilarious. If you ever get a chance to listen to them, you probably listen to them on YouTube too, but they're really funny, but it's clean. And it's just kind of one of those things that they have different scenarios and things that happen. But I really enjoy listening to Phil Harris and Grease. I think it's really funny. So at one time, I think it was a pretty honorable vocation. I don't know what kind of people they were as far as their personal lives, but I think it's been an honorable vocation. But it's really been hijacked by immorality that's really dulled our senses, if you really watch much of it, which I don't. But when an actor is given a part to play, that's really just the beginning. And I'm just going to read some of this, my first part here, and then I'm going to tell you about my own experience. Because believe it or not, I was an actor. You guys didn't know that, did you? Well, now you do. You have to learn your speaking parts, so there's a lot of dialogue. You have to come to know the character that you're playing. So in your mind, you got a vision of what that character would be like. So you have this idea, you give this script, and you read the script, and you read your dialogue, and you kind of understand what this character is going to be, and then you kind of have to interject what you believe are going to be that person's mannerisms, or the way that they speak, or the inflection in their voice, and things like that. So it takes a lot of time to do that. And if you're going to portray somebody, you know, biographical or historical, then it really has to be where you have to get to know that character, what they were really like and how they responded in certain circumstances and things of that nature. So you really want to be authentic when you portray that person, even though it's really not you. But you still have to be authentic. So you're putting in emotions and feelings and mannerisms all along trying to remember your dialogue. And so in my own experience, here's my acting experience. I was the star. That got your attention, didn't it? I was the star of our high school musical when I was a senior. How I ever got into that, I don't know. I don't remember what made me want to be in the musical. I am glad I did, because it was a great experience. I really enjoyed it. I wish I had done it all 4 years. But anyway, I did not. And this is not, Mitch is going to be all lost here, but this is not on there. But it was a musical as well, as it had a lot of dialogue. I don't remember a lot of the, obviously I don't remember the dialogue, but I do remember getting this little booklet, and it had all the parts, all the speaking parts in it. And I do remember having all the songs. Like, there's four or five songs, I think, that I did a couple songs, solo. I remember all that and all the words I had to remember, but I remember doing that dialogue and trying to remember, because it was, as the star, you had a lot more than everybody else. And so I had to remember all that. It took a lot of time and study and diligence, because I was playing a character too. So I had to really study what I thought that character was going to be. And I knew that if I did anything that was outside of what that character might do, that it would just be a disaster for everybody listening to that, or watching that musical, that play. And I do remember that I was a cowboy. The title, I do remember the title of the musical as well. It's called Girl Crazy, and that was perfect for me. As a high school senior, that was perfect. But anyway, I do remember that. I remember that my dad was out at Reubens. A lot of you folks maybe remember where Reubens used to be here in Shelbyville. He was out at Reubens, and he was talking to one of the deputy sheriffs, and I believe it was Frosty Heron. He was talking to him and said that my son's going to be in the musical, and he's going to be a cowboy, but he's also going to be a sheriff. Can he borrow your badge? So I actually had his real badge. And my dad told me, don't you lose that. You take care of that. And I said, I'll do that. I'll take care of that. Because I was a little bit concerned about it. But it was cool. I was all dressed up as a cowboy. Had a little fake gun and everything. And had the badge. And an interesting thing about it, too, is one of the co-stars on the female side, her name was Leanne. I won't mention her last name, but her name was Leanne. We really didn't, and she was my age in my class, but I really didn't talk to her much or anything until that time. Our whole high school career, we really didn't have much to do with each other until we did that musical together. And then after that, I don't know what she did, because, we didn't do anything together again. But anyway, interesting, I went to our, I hate to say this, but I think it was 40th class reunion. And anyway, she came and had a little get-together at the football game that night before the class reunion, which I've not attended one since then. But anyway, she's married to a man. They live, I believe it's Arizona. And she's married to a man who's an elder. at the Church of Christ in Arizona, and I really thought that was really cool because I was telling her, you know, a little bit about myself because we hadn't seen each other since then. Anyway, so the whole point is there's a lot of dialogue. I had to remember all these songs, and it took a lot of time to study. And in the real business, most of the time, if it's a live performance, there's also generally an understudy for the major stars that are actors that are in the whatever it's play or whatever it might be, the live performance. And the understudy has to do just as much, and it's kind of interesting that they're called an understudy because they have to do just as much. They have to learn all the dialogue. They have to study that character. They have to really know who that person is. So to be the main character takes a lot of diligence. It takes tremendous study and a lot of different aspects of that. And the audience will expect nothing less than that person portraying who they expect that person to be. In fact, it's interesting that actors today, you know, they're people, but they portrayed a certain person, and that's how everybody associates them, as that person. That's who they are. And it may not even be close to who they are. But they won't accept anything less. So anything that's foreign or anything that's out of character, people will know right away that that's something's wrong there. So it degrades their authenticity if the actor's portrayal is not to their expectation or what they expect to see. But Paul's not talking about something that's make-believe. It was fun to play make-believe for a little while in that high school musical, in that high school theater. It was fun. I enjoyed it. Like I say, I wish I'd have done it all 4 years, but I didn't. But he's not talking about something that's make-believe. But even in that world of make-believe, if the performance is not what they expect it to be, it will be to the ruin of the hearers. But he's not talking about make-believe. He's talking about something that's real. It's realistic. And that's what I want to talk about a little bit this morning, just a short period of time here. Be diligent, study. And he's talking about, so when we read the Bible, we're going to diligently study the Bible. We're going to diligently seek to know it. We're going to diligently seek to understand it. And it takes further analysis. You have to continuously study to understand, because there are so many diverse characters in the Bible that are real people. A lot of people feel that a lot of the Old Testament, these are just characters, these are cultural things. They're not real, but they are real. And so you've got to get yourself into that character to really understand their feelings, their emotions, what they were trying to project to you. And that takes a lot of work. But we study so that we'll know the character of Christ. We study to know how we can act in all situations. We'll study to know that, you know, so if we're talking to someone, it appears that we know what we're talking about so that we can give an answer, as the Bible tells us to do, for the hope that you have with meekness and with fear. We study so that we'll know the truth. You know, I was reading a thing about a 13-year-old who had been coming to church his entire life, and he could not in his mind, he said, this makes no sense to me. Everybody tells me, well, you're grasping all this, you're understanding all this by faith. But he, at 13, he needed something to hold on to because it didn't mean anything to him to say, you just constantly tell me, you got to grab everything by faith. You got to believe everything by faith. And yes, we do have to have faith. We walk by faith and not by sight. But there are things that the Bible tells us that are tangible. And I'm ahead of myself here a little bit. But there are things that are tangible that we can grasp hold of and understand that it is coupled with our faith. These tangible things we can prove our faith by. And I want to make sure I get that point out because that's extremely important in our study. So when we study, we should see evidence, not just evidence, but things that point to the proof of what we believe when we study. And that's what the Apostle Paul was trying to get everybody to understand. Trying to get everybody to understand it. And to me, I think it's really, it's easy for me to see. I can tell you what love is. I can tell you what compassion is. I can tell you what mercy is. I can tell you what affection is. When we take our communion, and we take our communion, and then we throw our things into the receptacle there, and we walk by this little pew right here, and this little girl's got her hand out wanting to shake your hand. I can tell you that that's pure love, that's pure affection. And that's what God gives us to see that we can hold on to. It makes perfect sense to me. And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful girl, and your children, all of them, are beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And it means something you can hold on to that couples with your faith. Okay, one of the stories that we, it's amazing what you can find out in studying. If you really do it diligently, it's amazing. One of the stories that we're so familiar with, and I know I've used it several times and for different reasons, is that of the story of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead. And I guarantee you, at least for me anyway, there's things about that story that, it's not a story, but that event, that stand out more than other parts. And one of the things, I mean, it's a miraculous thing that happened. One of the things that stands out to me always when I hear that story is, he stinks. He stinks. He'd been dead for 4 days. And I know if you've ever smelled that smell, it's something that'll never go away. You'll always have it. And you'll be reminded of it from time to time. He stinks. Been dead for 4 days. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time there's a stench. For he has been dead 4 days. So we're familiar with that. We're also familiar with what Jesus says to bring Lazarus from the dead. He says, Lazarus, come forth. He shouts it. And then Lazarus comes forth. And to me, he's still wrapped up in his grave clothes. But to me, the stench is gone. He's alive. He's alive again. That in of itself is something to really give consideration to what the power of Jesus Christ is. Not only did he bring him from the dead, but everything that was associated with death is gone. And we likely remember that those Jews that were following along with Mary, that they believed in Jesus. We probably remember that. That was such an astounding thing that happened that it made people believe that Jesus is who he says he is. And we may also recall that despite this miracle, there were other Jews that were really concerned that this Jesus, if he continues to do things like this, he's going to get more followers. And that's bad for us. We don't want that. So they hightail it and go to their Jewish leadership, which is the Pharisees, and they tell the Pharisees what he had done. And the Pharisees realize too that, hey, if he continues to do something like this, and we probably remember all this, if he continues to do things like this, he creates more miracles, then we're going to lose our popularity. People are not going to follow us. They're going to start following him. So we're going to kill him if we can. We probably remember all that. And I think this, to me, that's amazing. But do we think about, probably not at the forefront of our minds, that not only were they wanting to kill Jesus, that they wanted to kill Lazarus? the one that had just been raised from the dead. I want you to put your shoes, or your shoes, I want you to put your feet in Lazarus' shoes, probably sandals, as I read this. Now, this is after. Now, a great many of the Jews knew that he was there. And they came, not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might also see Lazarus, whom he raised from the dead. But the chief priests plotted to put Lazarus to death also, because on account of him, many of the Jews went away and believed in Jesus. Now, I don't think that Lazarus did not know what was going on. He was raised from the dead. Everything was brought back. He had the ability to think and see and to understand and to hear and to see what people were doing. Can you imagine being in his sandals? I'd just been raised from the dead. All that happened to me, I was sick, I died, I experienced death. Now I'm alive again, and now they want to put me to death. They want to kill me, probably stone me. You imagine how he felt. But I'm going to say, without diligent study, we may miss the entire point for us today. It's not just about this incredible miracle, which is incredible. We weren't there. By faith, we believe it to be true. But it's not just about that. We need to understand something. If we're going to be a Christian, and today, if we're going to be a Christian, and we're going to associate ourselves with Christ Jesus, then we need to understand that we may be putting our own physical life on the line. We, if not our physical life, we may be tormented mentally. And I believe, in my opinion, in this country, we're just in the beginning stages of more and more Christian persecution. Don't miss that point, because that's important for us. That's one of the reasons I believe, seriously believe, that Lazarus being raised from the dead is there for us to see. These are things we need to know. As I do, I watch some podcasts. Sometimes I watch podcasts that are Christian-based. Sometimes I watch podcasts that are not. Sometimes I watch what people are thinking. And one of the things I find really interesting is all these intellectuals who have their own podcast now that are really, they are intelligent. There's no doubt about it. But when it came, they got a lot of, I guess when they were standing in line for brains, they got intelligence, but over here they skipped the common sense part that they needed to go along with that. And I think you probably know some people like that, but it's interesting to really see some of these free thinkers, these intellectuals who call out the Bible as saying the Bible is a sad state if anybody's following it. You're in a sad state if you're following the Bible. Brother Don Chastain used to say, you know, even if all of what we're reading is not right, maybe you say it's fictional, maybe if it's fictional, okay. I don't believe it is, he'd say. Well, what if it is? It still shows you a good way to live. It still shows you a good way to treat other people. It still shows you a great way to love, to labor. And do you really want to take a chance that it's wrong? But you got all these free thinkers that say, well, this can't be right because it's pre-scientific. None of these things can be proven. Some say that I'm going to take my science and I'm going to disprove what you believe in the Bible. But as we study more and more about it, as we get further and further deep into it, we understand that the Bible is science. In fact, it's the major science book. It writes all the others. It proves the Bible. Science proves the Bible's authenticity. So these so-called intellectuals, make sure I read this right. These so-called intellectual statements simply proves the narrowness of those who feel that their own intellectual ability is far too superior to give credence for something like creation. So they create in their intellectual sophisticated mind all these other supposed fantasies, such as evolution and other ways that the world began, that cannot be proved by science. But creation can be. It's dumbfounding, their comprehension. But listen to something the Bible says about these people. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise and bring to nothing the understanding of the prudent. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? These are the intellectuals. Where is the wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the disputer of this age? Has not God made foolish the wisdom of this world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God. It did not know God. It pleased God through foolishness of the message preached to those who believe. For Jews request a sign, and Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified. To the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. And I'll describe this way. I can remember as a young person, we kind of challenge our dad just for fun, challenging, just to see who's the strongest. And he would say things like, well, I've got more strength in my little pinky than you got in your entire body. And you know what? I think he probably did. My dad was pretty strong. He would say to us, you couldn't fight your way out of a wet paper sack. I never tried that, but, that's the kind of, and that's the way I'm looking at it. God is all powerful. We can't even compare to him. But there's simple proof in the Bible that tells us the things we know that we can hold on to that are tangible and that couple with our faith. Long before space travel, before modern technology, even before the first telescope, Job had this to say some 3,500 years ago. He stretches out the north over empty space. He hangs the earth on nothing. Anybody see any of the pictures that the recent space travel, the Artemis 2, had sent back showing the earth? They're incredible pictures. And some of the other pictures that they took, it was just incredible. That's what Job was writing about. The earth is suspended in what appears to be nothing. Nothing's holding it up. And there are people yet today, and there's a group even yet today, that don't understand the earth at all. And you go out, and I want you to know the earth is a circle. When you look at the earth from these pictures, it looks perfect. It looks like a perfect circle. But you go outside, you can't really see that, can you? If you look, you can see miles and miles and miles. It looks like it's flat. And a lot of people believe it's still flat. Columbus, you go out and sail out there, you're gonna sail right off the edge of the earth. But the science of it has been there all along. I had students argue with me that the earth is flat. And I'm amazed at that. But we have pictures that show us, when you look at it from that same Artemis 2, that the earth, the shape of it is a circle, and it looks perfect. Isaiah wrote, "It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain, and he spreads them out like a tent to dwell in." The circle of the earth is right there in the Bible. The Bible is the ultimate science book. The earth and all that is in it. There's many other things. The Brethren at the Apologetics Press, they talk about a lot of intricacies in the things that we have in this earth, of animals and plants and things. And it just proves these are the tangible elements that substantiate the Christian faith. So if you run into a young person that says, you know, I don't understand grasping everything by faith, you'll have things to show them and to tell them. Grab hold of this. We could cite many other things in there. Okay. The book of books should have a tremendous impact on how we live. It should guide how we live. We can't know that unless we study it. But you imagine losing it. My wife's going to be mad at me after this particular section, so hang on with me and protect me as you leave. But you got one of these cars. You probably, a lot of you have one of them. I got one too, and I don't really like it. But I've got one of these cars now that you don't really have a key. My truck still has a key. I like that. You got the key, and you put it in the ignition, you start it up and go, hopefully if it starts. But you probably got one of these cars now where you have this key fob, and you got to have that key fob in or near the car or in your pocket or your purse or whatever you got, or your car's not going to start. And my wife has one of those in her car. Not crazy about it, but I think all cars are just about like that now. The problem with it is, if you have the key fob, if you lose it, you can't start it. Now, if you lose it inside the car, it will still start. But if you got something inside and you want to go somewhere and you don't want somebody getting in and breaking into it, you can't lock it. Because you try to lock it, the key fob's still in there. Well, they couldn't find the key fob. Rose and Silas both looked all over that, trying to find that key fob so that she could get it and put it in her pocket. It's important to find the key fob. First of all, it's really something you got to have. The other thing is, it's really expensive if you do lose it to replace it. So to me, I wanted to find that thing. Just on that alone, I wanted to find it. So I got in there and looked all over, and I probably did a better, more thorough look than they did. I pulled things up and looked around, because from past experience, I know it could be anywhere. But there it was. It was in this little cubby in the driver's door where you put your gloves or whatever else you might want to, or your trash, or your kids put their candy and stuff in. There it was, key fob. So we found it. But just imagine if it was a holy Bible and you're living before key fobs, you're living before modern transportation, you're living before the internet, you're living before your cell phone, you're living before any other source that you could possibly have except this physical Bible. And maybe it's this physical Bible that your parents or your grandparents or somebody's going to pass down to you, but it gets lost before you can know what's in it. It's lost. Now, we've got just such a situation in the Bible where God's word is lost. And lost for quite some time. So how would you respond? Well, this particular circumstance was found in 2 Kings chapter 22. And I'm going to go through this pretty quick. When that Bible is found, or when that law, I should say law, the Bible wasn't written yet. When that law was found, what it told King Josiah, and we probably remember King Josiah because King Josiah became a king when he was 8 years old. That's amazing to me. He could not be like my 8 year old because he was given lots of responsibility. And we learn a lot about King Josiah at 8 years old. He was just a child as far as age goes. Well, we need to keep in mind that God puts kings in authority and puts people in authority. And he always has and he always will. Daniel tells us he removes kings and raises up kings. He also says, in order that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, he gives it to whoever he wishes. He gives them authority. Josiah was 8. Joash was 7 in 2 Kings. And it's interesting that both of these young kings did what was right in the sight of God. What happened to the others that were older and should have been more mature and should have known better? Well, what they did was they neglected what God wanted them to do. They neglected the temple, the holy place of God. And they're in that circumstance in chapter 22 of 2 Kings where they're renovating the temple. And the book of the law had been lost. And all of a sudden, one of the servants, basically, of Josiah found the book. He was a priest. He found the book. And he went and showed it and read it to King Josiah. And when he read it, King Josiah realized that they had not been living according to the law of God. And he was so upset, he was so repentant, not just for himself, but for all of Judah, that he rent his clothes, he tore his clothes. It had a profound impact on him. And he said, you go find out from the prophetess, it was a woman, you go find out what is going to happen. So she did, or he did, his servants did. And they went to her. And I'm way ahead of myself, so sorry, Mitch. They went. And she said, because people have lived this way, because they have forsaken me as their God, I'm going to bring destruction. I'm going to bring calamity. But what about King Josiah, who was a good person, who lived according to God's law, even when he didn't have it in his hand? Remember, we talked about that this morning. What if you don't have, what if you're not one of the Jewish people, and yet, how do you know to do what's right and what's wrong? He did, even without the book of the law. He was still doing what was right. And then when he found out what the law meant, or what it said, he was really upset. What about him? Well, the Lord said, because your heart was tender and you humbled yourself before the Lord when you heard what I spake against this place and against its inhabitants, that they would become a desolation and a curse. You tore your clothes and wept before me. I have also heard you. Surely, therefore, I will gather you to your fathers, and you shall be gathered to your grave in peace. And your eyes will not see any of the things that I'm going to do. If we truly seek to serve God, his word, if we diligently look and study his word will create in us also a tender heart. And we will humble ourselves before him. But we cannot do that unless we study to show ourselves approved. Be reminded. As Paul told Timothy, the Lord knows who are his. We'll offer Christ's invitation this morning. the answers to all of life's questions are in the details. They really are. The answer to eternal life is in God's holy book. So if you have heard the message and your heart has been conditioned to submit to His will, why not follow through and be baptized today and become a child of God? If you are a child of God, but you need prayers for any reason, please let us know that too. Please let us know how we can assist you while we stand and while we sing.